part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part. Fanboy.com.
Cool. Well, shall we just get started?
Yeah. If you want to, whenever you're ready to hit record.
Yeah. No, I record as soon as I come on. So, you know, just in case anything interesting happens before we actually begin the chat. So, but yeah, no, let's begin the chat. My name is Christian Horn. Once again, this is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. We have been gone for several weeks. There's been a lot going on in my life, graduations, Girl Scout ceremonies, relatives visiting. So, and, interview cancellations. So Philip, you may be like, hey, we could have been on earlier and we could have, but it just didn't happen. So we are doing this interview now, which is good because your Kickstarter begins this week. And let me introduce who Philip is. Philip is Philip Myra. He is the creator of, like I said, you have a Kickstarter. It's going to be starting this week. By the time the podcast is up, it will be running. It launches June 15th of 2021. And this interview will probably be going up on June 16th. So anyway, the man's name is Philip Myra. The project is called Crackle, and it's volumes 1 and volume 2, correct?
Yep, both of them.
Awesome, yeah. And so, first of all, let me say that I really enjoyed these. I actually just finished reading the second volume this morning, and I find this to be like a really nice and unique project. I mean, it's very, I don't know how to explain it to other people other than that it's an anthology series, right, that you have written, and you have used different creators to illustrate and letter and color each chapter, right?
Yes.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's really cool. It's a great idea for sort of a writer to create his own stories and recruit other artists, which is, you know, what a lot of people do for their comics. But again, this is a very different project. Do you care to go into it a little more? Like, why an anthology, first of all?
Sure. As like a writer, especially a comic book writer, one of the first things you kind of look on the internet and see is do not start with your magnum opus. Like, do not try to write your 25-issue, 25-issue long-running story narrative. Like, it's not going to happen, especially when you start off.
Yeah.
A lot of the creators say start with short stories. Start with doing either a one-page story or start with doing at least a three-page story.
Yeah.
And so that's what I did. And I started slightly ambitious. I started with a five-page story. Based on a short story that I wrote, and that was the first story that's in Crackle One, which is Toulouse. It's about a story about a woman who goes back to her childhood home to see her parents, and she brings her two kids, and they go there for Christmas, and then the father asks, where's her husband? And the woman doesn't know where her husband is. And so it kind of unravels a little bit from there. I was able to adapt that story. And then I just kind of kept going. I kept trying to use new ideas that I had at the time. And instead of writing short stories, I tried just turning into a comic and using the comic language.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've been reading comics. I started in the middle of... I started reading comics in college. And so by that time, there was no, like, superheroes was a thing. Like, the New 52 was getting really big.
Oh, really?
But Vertigo was huge. Image had a lot of non-superhero comics, not a lot of non-action comics.
Yeah.
So when I was looking at comics, I was able to like read Why the Last Man. I was able to go through some of the Vertigo stuff, even though Preacher has some supernatural type elements to it. It is a lot of times it's people talking in a room.
Yeah.
And so I was able to read a lot of those stories and it kind of opened my eyes. So that was with the stories I kind of gravitated to. And then also visually seeing how the artist and the writer made things interesting of just people talking.
Yeah.
So I've been trying to do that, just creating short stories. Like I said, the first volume, Crackle, has a couple one-pagers and a little bit longer stories. And Crackle Volume 2 is my second year as a creator. And it's me learning more and more about the comic medium, meeting more artists, getting more ideas, and venturing out and to do longer narratives. So Crackle Volume 2 has a couple longer stories. I think the longest story is 9 pages. And so from there, eventually Crackle Volume 3, which should be out in October, is just mostly composed of 7 and 9 page stories. It's the slow progression. It's like, as a writer, you need to be able to tell fully complete stories. That was one thing I was very conscious about, like not to do like scenarios so you actually get a feel of completion of like, you can kind of understand the character or where the characters are coming from, and you can kind of see where they're going to be next, and you're going to want to know what happens next, but that's just the end of the story. As a creator, for some advice for young creators or early creators, I should say, as writers, get to the bare bones of it. Because a lot of times what I was learning was I was adding, even though I was doing the short stories, I was adding like too many characters, and they would just come in, they'd be like in one panel or two panels and just add a line of dialogue versus combining a couple characters or moving that dialogue to one of the side characters. And then you have, like I said, then you have like two people talking in a room versus 3 or 4 people talking in a room, and then makes more concise, but you also develop the characters better.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's interesting because cracking this open, especially the first volume, the thought that occurred to me, and I mean, you talked about it a little bit, but maybe we can get deeper into it. Sure. You know, this to me was very much like sort of like, particularly the first volume, was very like slice of life stories, you know, like little bits of things that like happen to people, and they're very interesting. And one of the things that I forget what movie I was talking about, but this there was a movie recently that I watched, and oh, it was called Eat a Cup of Tea or something like that. And it was on Turner Classic Movies, and it was an all Asian cast, and I believe it was the first maybe American release by the director of the Joy Luck Club. And it was an interesting method of directing. I was talking to my wife about it, where it was very much like he starts a scene and the characters start talking and there's no real resolution to the scene, right? It's like he lets your mind sort of fill in the blanks like as it's going. And I don't know if anybody else, I mean, it's supposed, I don't know if it's a famous film or a well-known film, but either way, it was a very good movie. But the thing that I started, it didn't bug me, but I was intrigued by it. I was like, wow, that's really interesting. And I'm going to have to go back and watch the Joy Luck Club again. But reading your stories reminded me a bit of that movie, because you have like a short story and there's not necessarily always a resolution. It's kind of like, okay, it ends. And, it's funny because my mind just like went in another direction. I was going to ask one question and now I'm going in this direction. But in any case, I'll get back to that other question. But can you talk to me a little bit about that? Because I mean, it's not necessarily leaving the reader hanging or anything like that. You're not like frustrated with it, but you're sort of like, it's a bit like life where you're just sort of like, oh, okay, it ended and that's it. And there's no real resolution. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Yeah.
Because I liked it. I was like, oh, this is cool.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of, yeah, you don't need resolution. That's a good way to put it. But there should be change. There should be emotional change, either in you or the character, by the end of it. Or there should be a change, like a life change of some sort.
Yeah.
More importantly, what I always strive for, even with the one pagers, is that the character or characters should make a decision, at least one decision, and that would drive the change.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I'm not sure, now that I'm like talking about it out loud, I'm not sure if that's because I have more what is known as like active protagonists or like active characters where they have more decisions in their life.
Sure.
But I mean, still, you want to see character do things and make choices, even if those choices are bad, or even if the choices are, you know, selfish. But then you also, I try to at least leave enough of an impression to be like, all right, well, this is not the resolution of those selfish decisions or choice. This is at least kind of a glimpse of like, hey, this is what's going to happen or may not happen. So all the rest is up for your interpretation. But like you said, it's kind of like a self-reflection on life. Like I would just think like there is no finite type of thing. Like even if you have benchmarks in your life of either through schooling, once you get done with a certain type of education level or job career, there's the next day after that. It's just constantly perpetually going. So it's kind of weird that stories have kind of finite endings, or, you know, like TV shows, they have almost like cliffhangers at the end of every episode instead of, like I said, like I'm more attached to the emotional, like cliffhanger, like where something occurs or something else occurs and you kind of let it rest for a little bit and then you close out the story because that way you can sit with the characters as they emotionally deal with, I mean, they just self-reflection on their emotions and then you in turn self-reflect on your emotions.
Sure. Yeah, no, which leads me, this leads me a little bit to the question that I wanted to ask before I went on that little, you know, side thing, side path, which is, again, when I opened this up, I was very interested in the kind of comics that you are into, because I know that when I was younger, for me, it was like superheroes, right? Like, I mean, and I've started collecting as like a little kid, right? And I'm still into superheroes. And obviously I love like all kinds of comics. But I was reading this and I was like, oh, this person seems to me to have been exposed to or wanted to create, again, like I said earlier, like more real stories, more slice of life stories, more grounded in sort of like people and reality and stuff like that. Can you talk to me about that? I mean, you did talk a little bit about Why the Last Man and Preacher, which is like my favorite comic book of all time, like one of my favorites of all time. But I would say like in your books, there's nothing that gets quite as extreme as Preacher, right? as like crazy, because Preacher goes crazy, but there's a lot of like really nice and you talked about emotional impact, like really nice and deep, little stories in here. So can you talk to me about, what universe of comics you discovered when you first started reading that sort of like drew you into the wanting to create these stories?
Like I said, it was just going through a lot of the Vertigos. One thing that did catch my eye, so like I didn't really read comics growing up, but the summer going in, I think it was the summer my freshman year of college, or maybe it was a little bit later, my friend, I saw him at the beach and we hung out and he had a copy of Walking Dead, the first trade. And this was, I think, like 3 months, because 3 months before the TV show aired. But I know he read comics. So I read that. And like I said, it was similar. It was mostly people dealing through struggle and strife. And then there's the supernatural force in the background that's secondary to everything, but it's mostly just people. And that really blew me away, because I just, like I said, that was the initiative for me to go start going through like Sandman and Why the Last Man. But when I started going through all the vertigos and some of the images, then that naturally leads to, like, how you were saying, that more slice of life drama. Then that gets to the more fantagraphics type side.
Yeah.
And I would read, like, Noah Van Sciver and a lot of his work. Charles Burns stuff, which is more a little bit more supernatural. But then you get kind of that way where it's, especially with the fantagraphics, I mean, it shouldn't be looping everyone together, especially the publisher, but fantagraphics usually publishes people and creators that don't, like, do a little bit more experimental as far as visual, but also storytelling. So I was reading comics that didn't have a lot of grid layouts and, like, clean panel divisions. So I was actually seeing what people can do with the comic book medium. Like, how can I tell a story? Like, I have this simple story, but if people are talking in a room, can I put, like, 30 panels and chop them all up? And it's just really, you're just reading dialogue, but you're getting snippets, and you can, you know, you emotionally feel that these people aren't, really communicating well because all these panels are chopped up, but their conversation is just super, super simple, talking about their day and coffee. Yeah. It's like things like that. And then you just keep, I don't want to say the word addiction, but, like, reading comics is kind of addicting.
Oh, it's definitely addiction. It's like crack on paper. Come on now.
Yeah.
Like, don't even try and hide it. Like, I mean, if you saw my home office, which I said earlier, I'm recording from the garage because I have family visiting and I'm the only one that gets up super early. But yeah, it's an addiction. It's just admit it. The first step is admitting it, my friend. Just say it. I'm an addict. You might as well just dive in.
There's so much different directions you could. So yeah, I'm not sure if this answered your original question, but it's more just like once you get one pinpoint of the constellation, then you can see, you can branch off to other points. And just like I said, you either follow creators, you follow publishers, you follow, even if you want to follow, like, years of, like, publications, like, oh, let's just see what was going on and kind of guess what was on the stands at this time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and then obviously you can expand out and do regions. Like, you can start doing the Franco-European, like, bande dessinées. You can start going into manga, which is a huge rabbit hole.
Yeah, yeah.
The fumettis, the Italian comics. Like, you can just start constantly just seeing what other people, like, how other people have expressed ideas and their emotions and their history and their whole lives, basically. It's just crazy. And like I said, and kind of going back to Fantagraphics, they do a lot of reprints.
Yeah.
And so a lot of reprints slash translations.
Yeah.
So reading some stuff, I remember my buddy gave me the Ethernauts, which is like a Colombian. It was a Colombian long narrative, but it was done in the newspaper strips. And this was done in, I think, like, the 60s, and it was a sci-fi narrative about, like, space aliens coming to Earth. But, like, so it was specifically long narrative, like, every strip connected to each other, which was kind of rare, especially back then. But also it was like a sci-fi one. Yeah, and it was really great. And I mean, it was really popular. I think Fantagraphics sold out of that really quick, so I'm glad I got it as a gift.
Oh,
but yeah, just
to,
like,
check
reading
that out.
Something like that. And it was just weird. Like, I would never know about this, and that the hero, I think it's Carlos Salvo, Juan Salvo, is, like, supposed to be like a counterculture type of figure in Colombia, due to, like, the anti-political stuff that was going in Colombia at the time, and, like, that comic strip. But it's just, like, I wouldn't know about that part, or I wouldn't know, but, like, I wouldn't get an inkling of the history of what was going on then. Like I said, I wouldn't know, because it's all about sci-fi space aliens. It's not a direct one-to-one correlation what was going on.
I've never heard of this, and I'm half Colombian, so, like, yeah. I've got to check this out.
Yeah, it's called Ethernaut.
Ethernaut.
Like, it's, oh, like, cool. Eternal, and, like, the word not, like, space not, because there's, like, astronaut, I should say.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's supposed to be good. The at the back of the copy of the Fantagraphics that I had, it was like, it said that the writer was eventually like, quote unquote, killed as a political, like dissident or whatever you want to call it. Like he was killed basically for his views and for writing like these stories.
Oh, that's never good. No.
Yeah.
That's not good. No, I mean, and that's one of the, it's interesting that you mentioned European and comics from other countries, because that's another thing that I, it's funny because, like I said, I have relatives visiting, and I was discussing, we went on a trip to like France and England, like before the pandemic hit. And when I went to France, one of the big things I wanted to do was like hit like French comic shops. Like I love European graphic novels. Like they're just so beautifully illustrated and stuff like that. And it's funny that you bring that up, because I was, you know, I said, oh, one of the things I wanted to do when I was in France was check out a comic shop. And, you know, my mother, she loves me and everything. And she just kind of like rolled her eyes. She's like, oh, Christian, really? Like you're going to France and you want to go check out like comic? But then I pulled some out, right, to show her. And she was like, oh, wow. She was really kind of blown away. And she knows French. And so she was kind of like reading a little bit of it, and she's like, oh, this is interesting. And she's reading it to me in Spanish, which I understood because I understand Spanish, but I don't understand French. But when I opened up your book and as I was reading through it, that was one of the things. And this is a very big compliment. There's a very European sensibility in these pages, you know, not only I would say in the art, because, you know, each artist is different in this book, but still I felt like there was a very sort of, like I said, European, feel, like, but also in the writing too. Also, you know, in the fact that not every story necessarily like holds your hand and makes you go through, like, you know, there's very ethereal parts to everything. And you know, it kind of lets you make your own assumptions about things. Can you speak to that? I mean, you've spoken a little bit about it, but how much when you were looking for your artists, what was the sensibility you were going for? Because I mean, they're very different, but in a way they very much interconnect as well.
Yeah. As far as my process goes, I mean, I don't mind going the nitty gritty, but.
Well, that's what we're here for.
Yeah. I mean, so I'm not sure if this is normal, but I write the script first.
Okay.
And so like I'll write it out and have it make sense to me. And then I go try to find an artist whose style that I think can, you know, best represent what's going on in there. But like, at least for me, I've garnered a lot of artist friends, and I've obviously collaborated with a lot over these couple of years. But I always felt, and I still feel this way, that I should have a completed script in order to share, like to give to an artist.
Sure.
Like, that way we can then discuss what works, what doesn't work. And then I always say, like, I shouldn't say work, but like, I always think this is a collaboration. Like I got this part. And so now let's talk about what, like I said, I want to hear your ideas. Like a lot of times, I mean, most of my scripts, I list sometimes gender, but like a lot of times I leave like weight, height, gender, race, a lot of like how everything looks, like as far as character goes, I let the artist choose that.
Interesting.
Like I want, because the artist, I want to see what their interpretation is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so.
Well, when you write a script, is it like, I mean, obviously, is it like DC style or is it like Marvel style? You know, like, are you writing like breakdown panel by panel?
Yeah, they're fairly detailed. That was another thing, like when starting out, we'll try to find like what is a good script format. And so the format that I have now is I break it down by page. So like page one will have, sometimes it'll be like a note section if I want to do something fancy. I'll be like, hey, I'm seeing this. It's a 9-panel grid because I feel that the last panel was very action packed. Like a lot of action happened last panel, and I want to do 9 panels because to get a steady rhythm, to get, you know, get almost like a reset for the reader.
Yeah.
And then I'll say like that in the notes section, then below that, I'll just give out page one or page one, panel one, and then describe what's going on in the scene as much as possible. Nothing like Alan Moore-esque, which is he's infamous for pages on one panel, but just something simple like, say where the location is first. You know, that's another big thing that a lot of initial writers, comic writers don't know, is like you have to tell the artist where you are. So like indoors, nighttime, you have to give these specific details and try to do it as soon as possible so they can get a better idea of location. Mm-hmm. So I'll do that. And then after the panel description, and I try to give as much detail as possible. It always like, this is the way I see it. Like I see that, you know, I see that there's two cars and both of them are blue or something like that, but you can, and here's some photo references, but do whatever you feel like. This is just what I think would happen. This is what I think people would be driving at this to be time-wise accurate. But then underneath that, I tab over, and then I put the dialogue. So like all dialogue is in a separate section. It's hard to describe. This doesn't make for good radio, but
sure it does. I mean, you're walking through your process. That's part of why people listen to this podcast.
If I had visuals, be like, this section is this.
Yeah. Well, we're limited, but you're doing fine.
Yeah. So underneath that panel's description, there's like a tabbed over section where it's the dialogue for each person. So for that dialogue, I always underlined who you put the speaker colon, and then whatever the dialogue is. And I've learned this through letters over the time, the dialogue should be in proper case, even though if you visually see it like in the final comic as uppercase, leave it as regular typed sentences, how you would normally type sentences. Mm. It says it's just easier for them. But like I said, I put all the speakers. So it'd be, and if there's multiple speakers, there's just one line and then underneath it, put the other speaker and, have both the speakers underlined. So the letterer, when the letterer gets to their portion, they can clearly see like, all right, well, this is page one, panel one, there's two speakers. And like in the next panel, there's only, so they can easily read and identify. Because the script is for multiple purposes, for multiple people that they should be able to read it. So it's another thing that I've kind of learned. But one thing that to know, like I said, to help the letterers out, because letterers usually they're the last person in production. Always put, if it's somewhere, if like you have a panel coming from off panel coming in, like if someone's like walking through the door, but they haven't appeared yet, put in parentheses, like in the speaker, like mystery voice. And then I put in parentheses, originating from the right side of the panel. So what's his face? So the letterer knows. And same thing with sound effects go in that section. And just to make it easier for the letterer, if there's no dialogue or no sound effects in that panel, then I'll center the text and just put the word no dialogue in bold, so that way they can clearly see how much, especially if they're, you know, letterers has to do a full comic, at least they can at least eye scan, be like, all right, well, this page only has three different things, but this page has 14 different things, type of thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's little things like that. I know one other good thing that I recently posted on Twitter about this, and it got some traction, was at the top of your scripts, put where the page turns are. At least that helps everyone. Mm. So like, just put like the page turns around the odds, which is normally happens, or page turns around the evens. At least my stories are short stories, so I just specifically say like page turns around the odds, and I list all the odd numbers. Yeah. Just to help out the people. But yeah, like I said, my scripts don't seem to be that complex, but there's enough in there. So when I give it to an artist that I may or may not have even like collaborated with, we can at least discuss, and most of the ideas are there. And then, like I said, we can build upon that. I know I do want to have more like build from the ground up type of collaborations. But like I said, a lot of the people that I collaborate with are extremely busy. So I want to be like, listen, this 80% is done right now. So like, here's like 80% of the work. Well, I just didn't say work, but like, I have the finished script here. Now we can move forward. Type of thing.
I was going to say
like,
80% of the work.
The first domino's down.
Yeah. No, I was going to say 80% of the work. There's a lot of drawing in there, my friend.
Yeah, that's why I took that back.
Funny. So talk to me a little bit, because I'm very curious about how, first of all, all the art in this is beautiful. Like every story is gorgeous.
Thank you.
So I want to say that. And then the other thing that they're all very different too, right? And so when I'm very interested in A, how you went about finding your artists. Like when you have a story, how do you go about assigning it to a particular artist, right? And I had C, but it went out of my head. But for right now, like, how did you find your artist? And then how do you assign a particular story to a particular artist? Because I would imagine, you know, they're very all different and all of them have strengths and, you know, I wouldn't say weaknesses because again, they're all beautiful stories, but you know, there must be certain things where you look at and you go like, oh, this would be perfect for this story or this would be perfect for this story, right?
Yeah. So I got extremely lucky. So like the first, my first scripts were the first two stories that are actually in the Crackle Volume 1, which is Toulouse and Head Above Water. And like I said, I just got really lucky as far as finding artists. So when Inktober was a thing, I finished both the scripts, and Inktober was just about happening. I think it was currently happening. I think it was October. This was a number of years ago, and there was just all these amazing artists are posting. I know a lot of them are kind of quick sketches, but just these amazingly talented artists. So I would go on Twitter and Instagram and look at all these arts. Now I've realized you can narrow it down and like search specifically for people that have the word comic in their profile. Mm-hmm. But I would just look at all these artists and kind of like see if they have comic experience, like look at their profile, look at their portfolio, I should say. And yeah, I was able to find Hannah Wenzel did Toulouse. She's an amazing German artist. And, I still have in an original email the post that was like, hey, I really like this drawing. Do you do comics? And yeah, I got really lucky. She's like, yeah, I haven't done really comics, but I like this story. Let's try it out. And
nice.
I mean, a number of years now, she had a really big book called Rocky Beach that came out in German. And since she's German, she does the German market. She had a big book come out last year. She's currently wrapping up another big book that should be out next year. And so like she got back into comics because of me. I found myself back. And then Kishore Mohan did the next story, did my second story that I ever wrote. And I have zero idea how I found him. Like I was, because I come from like, my background is as a computer programmer. So I have like kind of an analytical mind.
Okay.
So when I was looking at like finding artists, the Inktober, and as I was going to say Portfolio Day is another good hashtag to find good artists for. I was looking, that was one avenue I was going through. The other avenue I was looking at the comic book collab subreddit. There was another couple like message boards for freelance indie art comic book artists. So I was looking through there and I was like bouncing between like a letterer's portfolio mentioning that she worked for someone else, and then I was bouncing between people's I was going through like a rabbit hole of people's portfolios, and then mm-hmm. I went and I saw some writer that was like, hey, And it's like this long list of like projects he was working on. I was like, hey, I have a short story with Kishore Mohan. And I looked up Kishore stuff. I'm like, oh, this stuff's great. And I wish I like remembered who that was, but like that project never happened. So like if the guy didn't mention this project he's working on with Kishore that eventually never happened, I would have never worked with Kishore. Uh-huh. And then Kishore has a comic book with Vault Comics that's doing really well, called The Portrait of Everything Else. I think that's the title, or The Picture of Everything Else. It's a take on Dorian Gray.
Oh, okay.
And so, yeah, so like, he's breaking into American comics, but then he's like, hey, I work with, cause both of them are in India. He's like, I work with Aditya Bidikar, and he's a pretty good letterer. And Aditya, a couple days ago, got nominated for the Eisner for the best letterer.
Oh, wow.
We're really lucky. And that's another thing. Kishore and Aditya worked with Ram V and some of his early stuff. And Ram V's a phenomenal writer, and everyone probably knows him by now. Mm. He does things for Swamp Thing, and he's going to start doing Venom now. Mm. It's like a small world of just like lucky happenstances. But yeah, at least for a roundabout way for people that are listening that actually want to know how to find artists. Social media is a big thing. The comics, Twitter is, I'm pretty good with, and I found a lot of luck. In Crackle Volume 2, I collaborated with an artist, Zorka, I forget how to pronounce her last name, Gaeta. So Zorka, I found as like a suggestion, because I've worked with Hannah a couple times, and like on the sidebar of Twitter, it's like people you might be consider sure. follow.
Yes. Yeah.
It was Zorka. And then, you know, I've worked with Zorka just on one story, but it was one of my favorite stories. That's the one that's my most, I don't know, my most magical realism type story that I just love. The Checasera.
Yeah, that was beautiful.
Yeah. And a lot of that was just visually her. Like I said, it was a true collaboration. And it was just, it's just one of those things that it's a domino thing. Once the first domino is writing a script, and then it's finding an artist. But then once you kind of get used to the process of creating, then you just keep going. And it's easy now that I say this, and I have two books, I'm kickstarting two books.
Yeah.
But I mean, truth be told, there's times when it's, like, I don't write anything for 6 months. I don't have anything, you know, I don't have anything in process at all for large gaps of time. And it can be internally frustrating. And because you're like, I want to create, but like, I don't have the thought. I don't know. This is a personal strife, but this is like, I need to dedicate more time to creating. But, you know, when you are creating, and when a story is going, you get real excited and juiced up. But yeah, I mean, like I said, don't, as a creator to another creator, for those listening, like don't beat yourself up because you haven't done anything in large amount of time, like even a month, 3 months. Like I said, I can't remember the largest gap that I had between projects. I mean, Crackle Volume 2 took a while to finish. But yeah, I think it might have been like 6-7 months between when something was either like one story was basically done with, and then to the next time I even finished a new script. It's just like don't to from one fellow creator to another, don't beat yourself up. I mean, you know, the ideas will eventually come. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it sucks, the creating process. Sometimes it can be a process, and you just gotta kind of go with it.
Yeah. No, it's interesting because when you started conceiving this project in your mind, I'm imagining you were like, oh, okay, I'll start with an anthology. And you're saying like, sometimes it takes months for like ideas to gel. And then obviously there's the creative process of going back and forth with an artist and being like, oh, this looks good. This is okay. This is, you know, letters and all that stuff. I mean, obviously you have to have patience with yourself and stuff like that, but when you're creating each book, do you have an idea of like all the stories that you want to tell in that story? Or are you like, there's going to be whatever, 5, 6, 7 stories and I'll figure it out as I go? Or like, once I figure everything out, like, you know what I mean? I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I think that's a great way of working if that's, you know, the way your life is set out. And I actually find that very interesting. And do you have like a, you know, maybe I'm dumb guy, but do you have a theme that you have created for like every book, or is it just stories I want to tell, like stuff like that?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where it is stories I want to tell. And these are the stories that I've created throughout either a year long time or a year and a half long time. And then I just accumulate it because, you know, because it's, I feel like I have enough content to put into one book that will, that feels like a book. You know, like I don't want to put like a, you know, a 12 page thing out and then charge full price for it, 'cause I feel weird. And not feel weird, I'd just be like, I feel like I'm scamming someone. But like, yeah, I feel like if there's enough content that I can collect into a book, and it's usually about a year, year and a half time. And that's how the sausage is made. That's how crack gets done.
So but you've like, never thought about like doing conventions and like having one story and like a mini comic and stuff like that and then collecting them? Because I mean, there's a lot of people that do that, and it's like charming, like little things that you can like take home, you know, like zines or something that are printed out, and you know, you charge like a couple of bucks or whatever, and people go home with like a little story. Like, you feel like the need to have it in a complete volume, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've thought about that now that it's good that you said that, because yeah, conventions are coming up, and so I'm trying to think of like more ways to, you know, to get my stories out there, but also to like get satisfying things to people that come up to my booth. And so I have been thinking about that, because I am writing somewhat longer stories that can be read. Like I said before, it'd be like 5, 6, 7 page stories. Which, yeah, I guess you can print them out and fold it up. But yeah, I'd feel weird charging $1 for someone for a 5-page story. Well, now that
Why?
I have someone...
Do you know how much comics cost these days? Yeah, like, there's nothing wrong with that. No, I mean, it's interesting because I've been to a lot. I'm so old, you know, I've been to a lot of comic conventions, and some of the stuff that's the most charming, right, is when somebody is obviously a creator, like maybe you or I, and they don't have tons of time or whatever, and they make their like little stories, and it's like, oh, this is $1, this, you know, and they printed it out and it's small and whatever. Maybe they got it printed or they just printed it out themselves, and people love that kind of stuff. And if you ever get in that situation, and there's some stuff in here, let me give you another idea, young man. There's stuff in here that you could sell as prints. Like, there's some beautiful pages in here, you know, you're particularly like one page stories. There's some stories in here that are just one page. There's one at the end of volume 2 that is like gorgeous. I was just like, this is gorgeous, you know. So there's stuff like that that you could do that I think would really go over well, you know, if you were inclined to do that sort of thing, you know what I mean?
Well, that's a great transition, because I announced it a couple of days ago, but actually I have two of the stories that are in these Crackle anthologies, including the one that you hyped up right there. I'm having as posters, and I did these posters. I did them a couple of years ago, and I would just sell my conventions, but I figured to add them as Kickstarter add-on. So I have about 10 of each poster. So the one you were describing is called Sum. And that's at the end of Crackle Volume 2. And both these posters are huge. They're 24 by 18.
Oh, wow.
Which is pretty large. If anyone looks on my Twitter or Instagram, I posted pictures of me holding framed copies of both of them, because I have them hung in my own home.
Sure.
And high quality images of what the actual thing is of the image. But yeah, so that one's great. I've been calling them that. It was interesting because originally that sum was going to be a post. It was an original poster idea that I had, and I worked with Hannah with, and I just thought it'd be interesting to what I would call a narrative poster, where it's, you know, it's a gigantic image, but might as well tell a story.
Yeah.
So that one's good. That one's actually, I don't have too many of those. Like I said, I just have about 10 left because I've given that, I've had people come visit me throughout the years and love that poster.
Yeah.
And then I give it to them as Christmas gifts or something, or birthday gifts. And the other one that I have is that's available as a poster is Gutters, which is in the first volume of Crackle, which is a one-page story. That's the story of a homeless man.
Yeah.
Who is in the gutters of society, kind of quote unquote. So he's also trapped in the gutters of the panel, and he just can't escape either.
Yeah.
Either form of gutters. And so it's actually a good story about kindness. I don't want to spoil anything, but it's not as depressing as I make it sound like.
No, it's not.
But I love that story as well. That's another one where between Kishore, Aditya, and myself, we just try to whittle it down to how it should be and cut text and had things more visually representative. And then, it ended up being beyond anything I can imagine. So I figured to blow it up into a really big poster and put it on my wall.
Yeah, no, that one in particular reminded me a lot of like European stuff that I'd seen in like, you know, like humanoids or stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like the publisher, like I was like, oh wow, this is really like, you know, gorgeous stuff. Are there any of these stories that you wanted to expand upon? Like they're done in the, like, are you thinking like, oh, this would make a full on like great graphic novel? Or are you just like, no, I'm done. This is it.
I mean, to be honest, the intent, and like I said, this goes, I mean, all young creators should hear this. Like the intent of a story should be that story. If you can expand it even into like more continuous story, or even if you have to expand it for a couple more pages, which happened to me a couple times, but like the story should be the story.
And wow. George Lucas, what are you talking about? That is the most un-Hollywood thing I live in LA, so that is the most quiet, sir. No, if somebody reads your stories and they're going to be like, let's make this into a movie, let's expand it. The story is not over. I'm just kidding. Well, I'm giving you a hard time.
But the good news is, so the first story I ever wrote was Toulouse, which is the first story in Crackle. Yeah. And it kind of ends, like I said, it ends as much of a cliffhanger as I've ever written. But like it kind of ends at like an emotional, or like it kind of ends at like something's going to happen. It's like a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
But I wrote a story, because that, I don't think it spoils anything, but that story happens at night. So I wrote a couple years later, so about a little bit before the pandemic even began, I wrote what would happen like the next day. And so like I said, that story happens on Christmas Eve. So I wrote what would happen on Christmas Day, starting in the morning. Mm-hmm. And actually Hannah, like I said, Hannah's been very busy working on huge graphic novels. To my knowledge, she's letters them too. But so she finally got done with another big book for the German market. And so we should be beginning that story, I think in a week or two. So I'm really excited about that one, especially at the end of that one. I was crying while I was writing it. I just think the ending to that story is just so utterly perfect. And the thing is, it is a sequel. This story I'm talking about, it's called Loops at a Spool, and that will be in Crackle Volume 3. Like I said, it will be on October.
Gotcha.
You can read it. It's self-contained enough where you don't have to read Toulouse, but it is a continuation of that. So yeah, that one should be good. Hannah in pre-talks right now. We've been doing it for a week or two. She's like, well, I like to expand some of this. So the story, the script, I think, was 9 pages. And so she wants to, I think, expand it to either, she's like, maybe 14 max.
Oh, wow.
So it's going to be, to my knowledge, I mean, it's going to be the largest story in Crackle Volume 3. So it'd be a good centerpiece. But yeah. But that's the only time I've ever had that happen. There are stories that I'm writing in Crackle Volume 3 that I can see writing within that universe, not to spoil anything. I'm working on what I would call a pre-apocalypse story.
Nice.
And
my favorite.
Yeah. So like everyone knows a meteor is going to hit, but like no one really cares. I wrote another really emotional story. And that's being currently worked on by a phenomenal Brazilian artist called Cassio. I forget what his last name is. And so we're in thumbnailing stages of that. But like something like that, I can see doing as a long form, either like long narrative, like you said, like an ongoing series, or just something like a limited 300-page book, but through other people's perspectives throughout the world. And then also that one's a soft sci-fi story because it takes place in like 2070 something.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, but that's another fun thing is as a writer, you go through rabbit hole. So I'm like, I'm on NASA's and JPL's website, like learning how asteroids and meteoroids, but like how all like space debris is like labeled and named and like all these other things. Like all the craziness.
Oh,
and
that's
like,
cool.
Yeah. I mean, I learned it, but then also I know where I can reference it because some of it's like super specific, like, yeah. But it's all, yeah. It's one of those things where I've seen them mention too, is like being a writer is like you have homework every day of your life. Like you're just constantly learning and constantly be like, all right, well, I can like watch a YouTube video that explains this thing or that thing.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Just being a human.
Seek knowledge.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. So one of the things I wanted to mention to you is if you're doing like that sort of meteor thing, there is a movie called Last Night. I forget who the director is. Have you ever heard of it? Sandra?
No.
Sandra Oh is in it, I think. She's currently on Killing Eve. She's an amazing actress. But
Yeah,
it's
Grey's Anatomy, right?
What's that?
Isn't that the woman that was on Grey's Anatomy?
Yeah. She was on Grey's Anatomy. She's an amazing actress, but that's the first time I ever saw her in a movie, and I think it's Canadian. It might be a little hard to find, but it's great. It's an indie sort of thing, Canadian, and it's very much like it's the last night on Earth. Like there's something is happening. Nobody really knows what it is. And it's all these people sort of like going through the process of like, holy shit, like this is it. Like this is the last night on Earth. So anyone out there, you should check it out. And I actually have to buy that on DVD or Blu-ray if it's out, because it was one of my favorites in the 90s or like after the 90s, 2000s. But whenever it came out, she's amazing in it and she's an amazing actress. But on to my next question. So you said you're a computer programmer?
Yeah.
So how does a computer programmer, like, did you get into computer programming through writing, or did you discover writing later? Like, what is the balance of like your talents? Like, what finally made you sort of like create your comic book universe? You know what I mean?
My origin story.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, I've always been good with computers at a young age. I went to public school. I was very fortunate that my public school, high school, had phenomenal computer courses, just really good programming courses, but also hardware courses. And then I went to, when I went to college for computers, and I worked on those. And, you know, it was challenging. I went to a pretty good college for that. And then Yeah, but like throughout that time, and even in, especially high school, like I would always read prose. Like I'd be the guy that would always read, and like not to be stereotypical, but it wasn't like sci-fi and fantasy. It wasn't any type of. It would just be. I read a lot of Chuck Palahniuk and like Bret Easton Ellis. Mm. I read like as a high schooler, I read like The Beats and stuff, obviously. But like I would just read as much as possible, and even. In college, my college job was working at the library. And from there, I mean, I discovered Vonnegut. I discovered, but I can't think of anyone's names.
but had you always wanted to write too, like write fiction and stuff?
I mean, yeah, I took writing courses in college, but it was just more like, it was just one of those things like, if you do something enough, you're going to want to like do it. I think it equates to like even sports. Like if you watch enough baseball, you're going to kind of want to like do like a softball league in your local area. Like it's one of those things. If you do something enough, you're going to want to partake and try to, you know, perform that action, whatever it may be.
Sure.
So,
but there must be like a Batman parent shot in the alleyway moment, right? Like that made you go like, I want to create comics, for lack of a better instance, incident.
When I got to, like I said, I would write short stories, and it was just mostly just for my own appeasement. But then when I got to comics, I was like, this is kind of what I've been waiting for. This is I have a more stronger connection to this new thing, this new to me thing than I am with just regular prose. When I got into it, and I just tried learning as much as I could. Like I said, especially working in the library, especially working in a college library, and you have the interlibrary loan system of any other college, like in the country.
Yeah.
So you can just get whatever. Plus, I got lucky too, where I'm like in Chicago, we have a really good library system too. And they always get, you know, even some avant-garde books, even some Kickstarter books, which is kind of crazy. It's just one of those things where, I mean, I just felt this connection to it. And so then, as mentioned earlier in the podcast, like then I tried converting one of my short stories into a comic.
Yeah.
Because I had something that was existing and I knew the rhythm and stuff and knew the pace. And also it was slightly easier because I didn't have to create anything from scratch. So I did, but I also was wise enough to realize, you know, some things could be cut because, you know, now I'm dealing with visuals and I have to be like, it's one thing that I learned from reading Why the Last Man. I got, like I said, is one of my first books, was that, at least to me, I feel that you can open any page of that long narrative and kind of know what's going on, who these people are. And that's how I kind of feel with other narratives. Like I know sometimes my wife watches, I shouldn't say my wife watches a lot of TV, but she watches TV, and so she'll watch a couple different shows, and she's been watching for a while. And sometimes I'll walk in and she's watching a TV show, and if I can't understand the characters, like if I'm not attracted to these characters and the characters aren't well developed, like I should know that if I start, this is season 3 she's watching, if I go back to season 1, like these characters should still be represented the same way. Like that's how we started I walked in on her watching This Is Us, I think, in season 3. And I love that show, but like, I didn't know anything about that show. And so like, I'm like, these characters are really interesting because these characters are well-developed. It's not just like putting out content type of thing. It's not just like any type of a show to just be a show. Like each episode matters. So then I really felt emotion. I was like, oh, this stuff's interesting. So then I went back and watched the first season started to begin again, and I was like, oh, this is, you know, like I see the glimmer of what these couple scenes that I walked into, I can see that within these characters. And we did that recently with A Million Little Things too, which also it has its season finale, which is really good. But like, I looping back to like, I feel like Why the Last Man kind of does that with with pages. And I tried to do the same thing with my work, where like if you open a random page or Crackle, yes, there are different stories within that anthology, so you can visually see, you know, different art styles, but you should be able to be like, all right, I kind of know what's going on right now, because, you know, it's everything's building upon what's before and what's going to be after.
Sure.
So it's not just like a filler page. Like I said, like, it's not, I never wrote a page where it's just like two people punching each other, because you're going to glance at that.
Oh, why not?
But I mean, it's like, no. As a reader, you're just going to glance. It's going to take the artist 14 hours of their life to do that. And then you're just going to glance at it, and that's it, and go on to the next page. So like, it has to have substance. Like, I don't know. I think I was bringing up multiple points.
No, it's totally fine. So wait, let me ask you, well, it might not be the last question, but close to the last question. Why is it called Crackle?
I mean, yeah, I can tell you. I just think it's interesting, and this is in the Kickstarter too. I think it has multiple meanings. Like, it's an onomatopoeia, which is, you know, very comic book esque, but it's also a verb, and I kind of like the hard C sounds, like the double hard C and then the R. So it's kind of memorable, but also it's to my knowledge, no other comic is called that, because I had some other ideas and I googled the word, I typed that word and put the word comic and got results, even if they were webtoons.
That's a greater reason as any there, Philip.
I'm playing territory.
That's great. Well, cool. I mean, the project is called Crackle. By the time this interview airs, it will have been on Kickstarter at least for 24 hours. I think you should support it. I've really enjoyed seeing both of these volumes. Again, there's a very like European indie sensibility here. Some really beautiful artwork and, you know, nice writing by you, Philip. I mean, I think, you know, go to Kickstarter, look up Crackle and, check it out. Any final thoughts, Philip? Can people find you anywhere? Like, you had mentioned Twitter. What's your Twitter handle?
Same thing. It's just my name, Philip with two L's, so PHILLIP and Myra, MAIRA. I mean, I can, one little side note. So my last name is fake.
Okay. So
my father's from Sicily. And when him and my grandfather came to America, their original last name was Maida with a D.
Uh-huh.
But when they came to America, they switched. It was an Ellis Island. I forget which port they entered in. They switched it to an R. So there's a whole bunch of Myras here because it was an emigration. So a lot of people came from Sicily to Chicago region and also Toronto. So there's a whole bunch of Myras in North America. Oh. And there's just a whole bunch of Maidas in Sicily, and like there's like five names. There's like so much Philip Myras and Philip Maidas.
So basically what you're saying is if you have the last name Myra, do not bother Philip Myra. But if you have the last name Maida, you can contact Philip Myra.
Something like that.
No, this is great.
The comics. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate your time. I appreciate you contacting me. It's always great to hear from creators and, you know, have them on my podcast. I mean, you guys are what make the podcast, you know, able to be a thing. So I appreciate you coming on. You know, I wish you the best of luck with the Kickstarter. Obviously, you know, when this goes up, please support it. I mean, I think it's a worthy project. You know, it's Crackle. Volume 1, Volume 2, the creator is Philip Myra with the fake name. Any final thoughts?
No, I just love making stories and I just want to share them with people.
Well,
that's about it.
I wish you the best of luck with this, and you know, I'm excited for it. Again, I'm a big fan of like European indie comics, even though my origins start with superhero comics, which I still love. Don't be a comic snob. I really, really, really like this. These anthologies. I mean, you've pulled together some really great creators, and you've put together some really, you know, sweet and heartfelt, real stories. And I appreciate you sharing them with me and with our audience. Again, my name is Christian Horn, and this is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. Thank you for listening, as always. You can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that wonderful social media stuff. Our email, which Philip contacted us through, is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. Thank you for listening. Go to Kickstarter, look up Crackle, support it, throw all your money at it so he can do volume 3 in the fall. I really enjoyed it. So thank you for joining us, Philip, and we will be back soon, or hopefully not another 2 weeks, with another episode. Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy.
Part-Time Fanboy doing my thing.
Part-time fanboy.com.